Billy Bragg releases Tooth and Nail, his first new album in 5 years today. It's a more introspective, quieter album, and so is our session with a group of World Cafe special producers in the studio. Billy does a Woody Guthrie song on the album and says that working with Guthrie's lyrics from the archives on the Mermaid Avenue project had a deep effect on him. Find out more when we talk with Billy Bragg after this performance of No One Knows Nothing Anymore.
Deep down in the underground, atoms spinning round and round, scientists monitor readings, searching for the holy grail, a particle or at least the tale of the one that gives the universe its meaning. But what if there's nothing? No big answer to find. What if we're just passing through time? No one knows nothing anymore. Nobody really knows the score. Nobody knows anything. Let's break it down and start again. What happens when the markets drop? If the numbers really don't add up, everyone seeks a safe haven. And as they contemplate their ruin, the self-proclaimed smartest people in the room trying very hard not to sound craven. But what if there's nothing, no pot of gold to find? Only the blind leading the blind. No one knows nothing anymore. Nobody really knows the score. Since nobody knows anything, let's break it down and start again. Let's stop pretending we can manage our way out of here. Let's stop defending the indefensible. Let's stop relying on the hectoring of the experts whose spin just makes our plight incomprehensible. High up on a mountaintop, somebody with a skinhead crop is thinking deep thoughts for a song. And as they contemplate our one head being banged against a wall. What if our ancestors had stayed up in the trees? Would we still be weighed down by these worries? No one knows nothing anymore. Nobody really knows the score. Nobody knows anything. Let's break it down and start again.
Thank you.
No One Knows Nothing Anymore. I've read some of the things you've had to say about Tooth and Nail and about where it's come in your life and the period of kind of reassessment. What do you know now that you didn't know then?
Well, a good deal. A good deal that I know now that I didn't know then. I guess I've kind of like got more of a measure of my time, you know, the sort of, perhaps it's about the internet and the ability to, that for instant gratification. I've come to realize that the enemy of all of us who want to make the world a better place is not actually capitalism or conservatism, it's actually cynicism. Mm-hmm. The cynicism that is our greatest enemy is our own cynicism. And we all of us have to fight to overcome it, myself included. I hope to get Tony Blair elected. So you can imagine sometimes I wonder, you know, if I'd done the right thing. So, yeah, that, I think I learned that working with the Woody Guthrie Archive. Woody never wrote a cynical song in his life, you know. He spoke out against those kind of songs that made people feel bad. And by cynicism, I should just say, I don't mean skepticism or doubt. I mean cynicism. I mean people who've given up and they want you to give up too because it makes them feel better. It's such a cop-out, cynicism.
You said something about, last year, the box set of The Mermaid Avenue came out and everything was gathered together. And it was really very interesting to hear what you and Wilco, everybody else involved with that, all did together. Mm. And you said in some ways that this album is a follow-up to Mermaid Avenue, the one that I never had. Explain that.
Yeah, well, basically, back in the when the Mermaid Avenue records came out in I think it was 98 or 99, my antennae were starting to pick up the rise of the extreme right in the UK. I came into politics. The first political activism I undertook was kind of Rock Against Racism march. Mm-hmm. So I can see a swell of racist intent, particularly in my own backyard, in the town where I grew up in East London. The British National Party were a far right racist party. You were led by a man who questions the veracity of the Holocaust, that kind of party. So I wrote an album after Mermaid Avenue. I wrote an album called England Half English, which attempted to deconstruct the identity of the English, who are, you know, a fabulously mongrel race of people with a hyphen in their racial type, Anglo-Saxon, that little hyphen is quite important to us. But it kind of took me off on a kind of world music trip with that band that I had at the time, the Fabulous Blokes, who were all versed in world music. And I didn't really follow on that kind of space that opened up working with Wilco, which is a very interesting space. And last year when I was out on the road celebrating Woody Guthrie's centenary, I was playing theatre shows. And the first half was me sitting down playing an acoustic guitar. Second half was me standing up with a bit more chop and clang, the sort of stuff that we expect from Billy Bragg. But the sitting down part at the beginning was really interesting because the audience sort of metaphorically lent in to hear what I was saying. I realized that playing softly actually can get people to pay attention more than if you go on and try and slice the top of their heads off with Levi Stubbs tees. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I still get an indecent kick out of doing that. But there's also another way to approach it, and this album really comes from that space.
This album is pretty much mid-tempo, quiet. Mm. A lot of songs about where you are with your relationships and family,
it wasn't really conceived as an album. It's a friend of mine, Joe Henry, kind of told me as a dare that we could make an album in 5 days in his basement. He said to me, "Come over, don't bring anything, just bring some songs and a change of underwear. And you can stay in the his son's gone to university. You can stay in his room." After about 3 days, when we recorded 10 tracks with Joe's guys, which amazed me, I thought, if I write another couple of songs, I'll have an album here. So it kind of, I don't know what I was expecting to come back with.
And I know you co-wrote a couple of things with him, but you also do a Woody song on here.
I do, yeah. I've been playing, this is a song I've been playing for a while after the end of Mermaid Avenue. Woody's influence remains pretty big on what I'm doing. So I've been playing this song for a while because it's a great example of how Woody didn't just write for the 1930s. I mean, this is a song that talks about people losing their home to the banks, of people having to travel great distances and looking for work, of people dying for want of proper healthcare. In fact, I started playing it around the time that you were here in the United States of America were having a huge debate about universal healthcare. That's one of the reasons why I started playing it. And I just find that it's still relevant today, despite the fact it was written over 70 years ago. Mm. It's called "I Ain't Got No Home in This World Anymore."
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. just a wandering worker. I go from town to town, and the police make it hard for me no matter where I go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road, long and dusty road at a million feet of trot. Now the rich man took my home and drove me from my door. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I was farming on the shares and I was poor. My crops are leading to the banker's store, and my wife took down and died all on the cabin floor. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I'm minding your mines and I gathered in your corn. I've been working, mister, since the day that I was born. Now I worry all the time like I never did before. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore. And as I look around, it's mighty plain to see world is such a strange and a funny place to be, where the gambling man is rich while the working man is poor. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
Billy Bragg doing, what do you got, three songs? I Ain't Got No Home in This World Anymore. It's one of the ones on Tooth and Nail, the new album. I was always curious, when you got involved with Mermaid Avenue, did you know a lot about Woody, or did you realize at that point you didn't know that much about Woody and you were studied up?
I knew about him and why he was important, you know, like most people of my generation, and probably most people listening. I came to him through Bob Dylan. You know, there's very few people who still go into Woody, you know, along with Pete and those people. So, yeah, I knew he was, and I knew he was important. But and if you're someone like me who grew up listening to 1960s, 1970s singer-songwriters, you kind of learn Woody Guthrie songs by osmosis. You know, you don't even realise you know them. You know, so I didn't know his life story. When I took the job from Nora, fortunately around that time, Joe Klein's biography came out, which was just a brilliant read. And I sort of devoured that. And then I went down to Okemo as well in the course of the process to try and get a bit more of a feel for him. But he's kind of everywhere in America, Woody. It doesn't matter where you go, there's a bit of him there somewhere.
Can you get a feel for him in Okemo, or is he? Did they?
Well, you couldn't then. This is very interesting. I was 16 years ago. I was in Okemo for the first Woody Guthrie festival, and although there was efforts among the Okemans to commemorate him, It was pretty marginalised. It was still, should we say, a little bit contentious. There was a woman in a shop told me that she'd put a sign in the window, or on. It's kind of like an antique shop, you know, kind of one of those fabulous antique junk shops. And she'd had some stuff outside, and among them she put a little sign that said, Okemo, Oklahoma, home of Woody Guthrie. It's a little hand-painted sign, and someone had written on it, communist, except they spelled it commist. As ever, the far-right intelligentsia, in your country or in mine, very few of the letters I get when I go on the radio and criticise the British National Party, their grammar's pathetic. I have to say that, and I'm pleased to say it's the same here. But now I just went back last summer for the centenary, and in a space between some houses where previously there was nothing there's a little garden there, there's a statue to him, and around the statue there are little tiles with the names of his songs and people's names who've bought the tile, sort of like, you know, supporters of Woody. And the thing that pleased me most was that the Mermaid Avenue songs were seamlessly integrated with Woody's classic songs, which made me feel really proud, because they obviously, you know, they don't belong to me and Wilco, those songs. You know, they're Woody songs. The Oklahomans are coming around much more now to understanding that in Woody Guthrie they have an American who is, as far as I'm concerned, as an outsider, is slap dab in the middle in between Walt Whitman and Bob Dylan.
Billy Bragg is our guest on the cafe today. And, well, now, you know, you've been the Bard of Barking forever, but now you have become the Sherpa of Heartbreak. Explain this.
Yeah. The Sherpa of Heartbreak is a phrase that turned up in my Twitter feed. I am very 21st century, that is, in my Twitter feed. Because it had my name in it. It wasn't addressed to me. It just had my name in it. So it came my face. And it was just, I can't even remember exactly what it said now, which is a little bit embarrassing. But it's basically something along the lines of listening to Billy Bragg to get over my breakup. He's the Sherpa of Heartbreak. And I thought that idea of my songs doing the heavy lifting for someone who's obviously in difficult times. It was a woman. That's the one thing I do remember. It was a woman who was listening to it. And I thought, you know, one, I'm really pleased that my songs can help someone do that, because I have songs that help me do that. But two, I guess, you know, when people think of me, they often think of me involved in the political struggle. And yet many of my songs are about the struggle to maintain relationships, particularly long-term relationships, which in itself can be, a day-to-day struggle sometimes. So I just thought that maybe I should remind people that I am also the Sherpa of Heartbreak, and maybe write a few more love songs on this record, you know?
There's a number of them on here.
Yeah, well, there's a whole generation of young political artists out there who are getting stuck in. They don't need me, you know, desperately trying to climb to the top of the barricade and point the way. They're quite capable of doing that. So, yeah, I just write about things that make me angry and frustrated. You know, I'm not really a political songwriter. It might be that something that the government does makes me angry and frustrated. It might be something that I do in relationships. You know, it could be about anything. I'm just trying to use the guitar to get those things out. And, you know, it's great therapy. When I write these songs, I come out in the dark and sing them to all these people. And when they clap, I don't feel so bad about it. It's like therapy. You know,
does it work in your relationship? Do you sing them, like, to your wife or whatever? And
I do, and it kind of sometimes works. I do this actually. I maybe I should play you one that I actually wrote for my wife. My wife is an amazing. She's brilliant at interior design and stuff that she does around the house. Particularly, she's very good at, and I am absolutely useless at it. I am so bad. She gave me a power drill once for Christmas, and I made such a big hole in the wall trying to hang a painting that we had to buy a bigger painting to cover it. And she never let me. And the terrible sad thing is that my dad was brilliant at all these kind of things. He was really great at it, and I have inherited none of it. But my brother's a bricklayer, and he's actually doing what my dad did in many ways. I know he won't hear this program, so he won't mind me saying it, but it's taken him 5 years. In fact, he hasn't even finished yet to build an extension on the back of his house, which is exactly what my dad did during our childhood. He spent a lot of time out the back making an extension. But me, I'm the other way around. So maybe I should, this is a track of the new album, maybe I should sing it. It goes like this.
Never gonna be the handyman around the house my father was. So don't be asking me to hang a curtain rail for you, because screwdriver business just gets me confused. Takes me off and out to change a fuse. When I flick the switch, the light's all blue. I'm not your handyman. Don't be expecting me to put up shelves or build a garden shed. I can write a song that tells the world how much I love you instead. I'm not any good at pottery, so let's lose a T and just shift back the E, and I'll find a way to make my poetry build a roof over our heads, yeah. Like I'm just sat here reading the paper, but these ideas I'll turn to gold dust later. 'Cause I'm a writer, not a decorator. I'm not your handyman, yeah.
Yes, to say that's a bone of contention in our house will be.
So did you get it? Yeah, you got that right when you sang it?
Yeah, I do. I get a lot of that. I get a lot of women saying to me, how do you know this about our relationship? It's obviously a common thing.
Well, you know, seeing as if you can't become the Sherpa of Heartbreak without having done it well in the past. So I thought maybe you might want to do something going back a ways.
Let's see if I can do something like this.
So exciting to be sleeping here in this new room. Surely you're my reason to get out of bed before noon. Surely, you know, when we sat out on the fire escape talking. Surely, what did he say about running before we were walking? Sometimes when we're as close as this, it's like we're in a dream. lie there and think of England, bling. You don't even know who's in the team. Charlene, your sexual politics have left me all of a muddle. Charlene, we joined in the ideological cuddle. Celebrating my love for you with a pint of beer and a new tattoo. And if you haven't noticed yet, I'm more impressionable when my cement is wet. Politics and pregnancy are debated as we empty our glasses. And how I love those evening classes. Surely you really know how to make a young man angry. Surely can we get through the night without mentioning family? The people from your church agree it's not much of a career trying the handles of parked cars. Whoops, there goes another year. Whoops, there goes another pint. If I was your old man and you was my missus, surely give my greetings to the new brunette. Give my greetings to the new brunette. Greetings to the new brunette. Greetings to the new
Billy Bragg. So how old were you when you wrote that?
I guess I must have been 27, 26, 27. Yeah.
It's not quite as universal as I ain't got no home in this world anymore. But
no.
Some of those things, though, continue, you know, those relationship touchstones. And maybe
They do. I mean, it was the very ideological times. And it was all about that difficult of the how to move from discussing the Marxist dialectic to discussing the deeper things of life, the important things of life.
The ideological cuddle.
They're very same. Yeah. They're very same.
Thank you so much for being here. It's great to have a new album. It's great to have you back here.
Well, thank you for your support. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone for coming down.
And thanks to our special producers for support the show. So they're here as well. Thank you all.
Cheers.